I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Henry Flagler made his fortune in founding Standard Oil along with John D. Rockefeller, but his legacy lives on along the Atlantic coast. Flagler spent the second half of his career turning St. Augustine, the nation's oldest city, into a vacation destination for the country's rich and elite. In his new book, Mr. Flagler's St. Augustine, historian Thomas Graham makes a detailed examination of Flagler's world as he transformed the Florida frontier into a destination through rail and upscale hotels. I will speak with Graham about Flagler's impact on the state of Florida and the legacy he left behind. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio by Tom Graham. Tom is a professor of history at Flagler College in St. Augustine, and his book, Mr. Flagler's St. Augustine, tells the story of how Henry Flagler transformed the city into a vacation destination for the rich and the elite. Dr. Graham, thank you very much for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, before we talk about Flagler's project to turn the nation's oldest city into a tourist destination, I want to talk a little bit about his first business. Now, Flagler made his money in Standard Oil. Talk a little bit about how you describe in the book, he came from a kind of a impoverished background or a poor upbringing, and he sort of learned to count his pennies, and that was kind of quite critical in the way he forming his character and allowing him to build that platform of success later on in life.
Sure. Well, one thing is we don't know a whole lot about Flagler's early life because he was a very reticent person, and he never wrote about it, didn't speak about it very often. But his father was a Presbyterian minister in a frontier area of New York and Ohio. Flagler, like so many boys did in his day, left home at age 14 to go and seek his fortune. He went to Ohio, where he had relatives in the Harkness family. And I think that was a strategic move. He realized that the Harknesses were doing much better in Ohio than his father was in central New York. And he got a job with a relative in a general store, but moved up quickly, partly because I think his relatives, who were major grain dealers in the Cleveland area, they were buying and selling wheat and corn from the heartland of America. I think his relatives realized that Henry Flagler was a man with talent, young man on the way up. And Flagler made a strategic move. He married Mary Harkness. Write this down, listeners. Mary the boss's daughter. And that got him on his way. But then Civil War came along. He tried a venture in mining salt in Michigan. The Union armies needed salt. Worked fairly well. But then the war ended and the market for salt crashed and Flagler found himself in debt. Went home to Cleveland and there encountered a man who had also been in the grain business, John D. Rockefeller. And as Flagler later said, Rockefeller and his partner Andrews had built a small oil refinery on a hillside outside of Cleveland. And as Rockefeller later said, I knew Henry Flagler from previous years. I knew he was a man of talent, and I asked him to come in. And with Harkness investment money and Henry Flagler's talent and a partnership with John D. Rockefeller, Standard Oil was born.
Just before we talk a little more about that, I'm wondering, in your research for the book, you say, you say that Flagler was a pretty reticent person. He didn't write a lot about himself. So was it difficult doing the research to sort of build this picture of him?
Well, yes. It's always, for a historian, it's always frustrating. There's never enough documentation, never enough evidence to suit you. So there is a certain amount of frustration there. And yet, there's plenty of information around. These days, we have the Henry Morris and Flagler Museum in Palm Beach, which has a good volume of Flagler materials, although they will tell you that they're sorely lacking many years in Flagler's life. Another thing that helps is the Internet, that these days there are a lot of resources that are in the form of databases and that you can access, and that helps. And I guess I might say another thing is that I retired from full-time teaching 5 years ago, and I had the luxury of lots of time to do research and to chase down new sources.
How long has this book been percolating around in your mind?
Oh, I like to say 40 years, because I started teaching at Flagler College in 1973, which is housed in Henry Flagler's Hotel Ponce de Leon, which is where his Florida ventures began. But really the book took firm shape about 5 years ago when I realized we were approaching the 500th anniversary of Juan Ponce de Leon's discovery of Florida and the 450th anniversary of Pedro Menendez's establishment of the city of St. Augustine, so that I realized just about this time there would be a pretty good bit of public interest in St. Augustine and Florida history.
Just coming back to the partnership between Flagler and John D. Rockefeller, I mean, those names, that like Rockefeller is such a critical part of American history. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about, you know, how they built that empire and how it sort of changed, you know, the way the United States operated and I guess the way Florida looked too.
Sure. Big, important question. One thing I would say is everybody in America knows John D. Rockefeller. And outside of the state of Florida, I don't think very many people know Henry Flagler. But along the way, John D. Rockefeller was asked by a government investigating committee, how Standard Oil got started. And Rockefeller said something like, well, I wish I had had the brains to think of it, but it was Henry Flagler who came up with the idea of Standard Oil Trust, which was the way in which Standard Oil gained control of all of the refineries, almost all of the refineries in the United States, one by one by one, and consolidated them into one huge company. And once Standard Oil controlled the refineries, it had a critical grasp on the whole oil industry. And Flagler and Rockefeller were very close friends. They lived close to each other in Cleveland. When they moved to New York, they lived across the street from each other in New York City. They saw each other every day. They had their desks in the same office room for decades. And they were both like-minded men, ruthless competitors, worked very hard to be efficient, worked very hard to drive down the price of their product. And when the government complained that they were a monopoly, they said, well, look at the price of kerosene. It's plummeted under the efficiencies of Standard Oil. So Standard Oil was an example of the future of business organization in the United States. It was the biggest example of business consolidation. And Standard Oil would soon be followed by companies like United States Steel, which would follow the same pattern.
Flagler, I mean, his legacy is pretty key to what's happening now in Florida too, isn't it? We have this reversal to try and, you know, put more into railroads now, it seems. So I find that interesting too, but things have come full circle in some ways.
Well, it has. efforts to get a high-speed rail between Orlando and Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I'm driving I-95, such as I did today driving from St. Augustine to Orlando, I think how much more convenient it was 100 years ago when you could get aboard a Florida East Coast railway car, a Pullman car, sit in a comfortable seat, be served beverages. If you went overnight, you could have a sleeping accommodation. You could sit in an observation car. And it became a tour in luxury. And today we have to fight the traffic. And looking backward from Henry Flagler's day, it simply was impossible to get around in Florida. Well, I won't say impossible. It was very slow, very difficult to get around in Florida before his railroad.
Mm-hmm. Well, boats were quite an important way of transportation, too. I know that Sanford, for example, was a pretty major hub for transportation with the boats coming up the river there, but that changed when the railway took hold.
Right. When Henry Flagler came to Florida, the St. John's River was the major artery of transportation in the northeastern section of the state, and there were lots of steamboats going up and down the St. John's from Jacksonville all the way to Sanford, and towns like Green Cove, Springs, and Palatka on the St. John's River were thriving towns, and to some degree these towns became backwaters,
mm-hmm.
Particularly Green Cove Springs, as Flagler's railroad bypassed them, as rail transportation became more important than water transportation.
There are many interesting parts to this book. Anybody who's interested in Florida history, and specifically Flagler's empire and St. Augustine itself, will find much to enjoy. Some of the things I find particularly interesting, too, are the fact that you have these people who are building railroads, building hotels, and there are always little advances in technology. And at one point you talk about how Flagler had to have purpose-built concrete mixers designed and built the biggest of their day, you say, because of the challenges of building this hotel in St. Augustine. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Flagler was once asked, what was your most difficult problem in Florida? And surprisingly, he did not say building the railroad to Key West. He said building the Hotel Ponce de Leon in St. Augustine. Because here was the oldest city in America, and I needed to build a modern hotel with all the modern conveniences for an elite clientele, and yet this hotel had to fit in with the ambiance of an ancient little Spanish village. And one of the things he came up with, he and his architects and engineers, was the idea of building this hotel in cast-in-place concrete. One of the technological marvels of the 1800s was the development of Portland cement. And that made the use of concrete and all sorts of structures possible. In fact, the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty is made of concrete, and Flagler hired the engineer who was in charge of erecting that to come down and help him build the Hotel Ponce de Leon. So yes, you had in a way it's an old Renaissance Spanish looking building, but it's modern in that it employed a recent technological development in concrete construction.
And in your book, you talk a little bit about how the architects were discussing amongst themselves, you know, the correct kind of design for this, how to make sure that the building didn't overwhelm its surroundings. So there was that interplay. I guess people always have debates nowadays when a new building goes up. How does it fit in? Is it going to look out of place? So the same thing was going on back in the 1800s.
Yes, yes. And Flagler certainly had some opposition in St. Augustine, because it was a small town, and here you had this Yankee multimillionaire coming in and dramatically transforming this small old frontier town. And yet, it works.
Mm-hmm.
People looked at it and they said, yes, these buildings fit. And Flagler's architects were sensitive to that. They wanted to fit in. And I think they did. So in this case, it was largely a happy transformation in which modern buildings were accommodated to an ancient city in a pleasing way. And I think people here in the 20th century, 21st century, tell you where I live, we still look at those buildings and say, yes, this fits in with the old Spanish buildings in St. Augustine.
I'm Matthew Petty, and you're listening to Intersection on WMFE. I'm speaking with historian Thomas Graham about his new book, Mr. Flagler's St. Augustine. You can join the conversation online on Twitter at WMFE Orlando or on Facebook. You can also email your comments to intersection at WMFE.org. An archive of previous shows can be found at WMFE.org/intersection. Do you think Flagler envisaged St. Augustine developing into something much bigger than it is today?
Good question, but I don't think he really saw it as developing into a big city. I think he envisioned it as a winter resort, and a winter resort that would remain a relatively small town. Now, one thing you have to keep in mind, at least in terms of Flagler's St. Augustine enterprise, was that his hotels were open only for 3 or 4 months out of the year. In those days, pre-air conditioning, the tourist season was December to April. And so Flagler realized that St. Augustine was not going to become a major transportation center. It was not going to have major industry. I think he saw that it was going to be a tourist resort area, which in large part he was correct, mm-hmm. and St. Augustine still has that character today.
I guess the invention of air conditioning really has changed Florida pretty significantly, too.
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm.
Flagler was, we say he opened up the East Coast to Florida. His Florida East Coast Railway went from Jacksonville through Ormond Beach, Palm Beach, Miami, all the way to Key West. And so he justifiably is credited with opening up modern-day Florida. And I might add, one of the things that did revolutionize Florida history at the time was the discovery of the cause of yellow fever, which happened during the Spanish-American War when American soldiers were in Cuba,
mm-hmm.
because this had been one of the things that had kept white Europeans out of Florida for centuries, was the fact that in the summertime, you had fevers, malaria and yellow fever, and that white men just couldn't survive in Florida, or so it was said. Well, that was one big change, the discovery that mosquitoes were the culprits.
Mm-hmm.
But then you came 50, 60 years later, the development of air conditioning, and that was the second great transformation, development that allowed for a population explosion in Florida. You had one under Flagler, where Florida went from being the least populated state east of the Mississippi, with maybe the exception of Delaware, I'm not sure there, to today being, what are we, the third or fourth largest state in the most populous state in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a boom in population in Flagler's era, but it's a boom that's been dwarfed with the population growth that we've had since World War II.
What did they do with the hotel in those months, the summer months when it wasn't open? They just shut it down completely?
Pretty much. Yep. St. Augustine, Ormond, Palm Beach, Miami, these big hotels were just shuttered and closed,
mm-hmm.
and sat empty 8 months out of the year.
Just coming back to the connection between Flagler and Rockefeller and Standard Oil, How important, if at all, was the rail line to the transportation of oil? Was that a major part of that?
Oh, that was a key thing. And it was a key area in which Henry Flagler played a supremely important role. He was Standard Oil's railroad man. He was the partner who made the deals with the Pennsylvania Railroad, with the New York Central Railroad, and basically played one railroad off against another in order to get lower shipping rates for Standard Oil. Flagler is credited with developing rebates and drawbacks that gave Standard a competitive advantage over other oil refining companies and ultimately drove them either out of business or into consolidation with Standard.
Mm-hmm. What about Miami and Palm Beach? When you talk about the railroad going all the way down to Key West, how important was it having that railroad linked to the development of Miami, for example?
Sure. Now, there had been people in the Lake Worth area, the Palm Beach area, and there had been people down on Key Biscayne, down in Miami. But in both cases, you didn't have good water access. Neither Palm Beach nor Miami had really good deep water seaports. And so they were dependent upon the arrival of Henry Flagler's railroad for them to open up. And one of the things that Flagler did in Miami was the beginning of the dredging of a ship channel. Mm-hmm. In Key Biscayne so that Miami could have something of a seaport. So, at least for South Florida, Henry Flagler's railroad really was key.
Was St. Augustine ever in the line for a port the size of Port of Miami or even, you know, Port Canaveral now?
St. Augustine likes to call itself the oldest seaport in America. And I suppose justifiably so, but St. Augustine's inlet has always been cursed with sandbars.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was on the water just yesterday, and one of the things that we marveled at was the shifting sands that fill in various parts of the Matanzas River there in the inlet. So St. Augustine, yes, it was a harbor. In fact, it was a major harbor during the American Revolution when ships were coming and going. But it was a major harbor in which the inlet was littered with the skeletons of ships that had run aground.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that St. Augustine would ever be a major seaport really never caught people's imaginations. For one thing, it's too close to Jacksonville, and Jacksonville just has a much better chance of being a seaport.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty huge now, isn't it?
It is.
I'm wondering, do you think, I mean, would St. Augustine look a lot different now, aside from the hotel, of course, if Flagler hadn't decided to sit down roots there?
I suspect if he had bypassed St. Augustine would look a lot like other towns that got bypassed, like Green Cove Springs, Palatka. Although St. Augustine always had this distinction of being the ancient city, mm-hmm. the oldest city in America, and it had always, 100 years before Flagler, it had attracted people who wanted to go and see the antiquities of St. Augustine, the old Spanish fort and the oldest house in America and that sort of thing. So St. Augustine would probably have maintained that character. And St. Augustine would like to think of two major episodes. The first is the Spanish episode with Pedro Menendez. And the second one comes 400 years later with Henry Flagler. And so if we take away Flagler, we would just have Menendez and the Spaniards.
Mm-hmm. The fort would still be there.
The fort would be there, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty solid building. Did you uncover anything surprising about Flagler? Just coming back, I guess, to your comment about him being a fairly private person, were you able to uncover anything that you hadn't kind of thought about before about him, or anything that sort of made you think differently about his legacy?
Well, I guess the most fun thing for me was discovering that in his old age, Henry Flagler became an automobile enthusiast. Now, as I was researching this, I talked to some people who are experts in vintage automobiles, and I said Henry Flagler, and they said, Henry Flagler, he's a railroad man. He's not cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no. In 1904, he bought a big steam-powered limousine made by the white sewing machine of his old town of Cleveland, Ohio. And so, in a way, he fits the pattern of the early days of the automobile. The cars were the play toys of millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And Flagler fits that profile very well. He enjoyed driving his cars. He bought several of them. He bought a fleet of cars to go with his hotels so that guests in his hotels could take a tour in an automobile, as well as take a horse-drawn carriage if they preferred to do that. And then he realized that if you're going to have automobiles, you had to have hard surface roads. So he was a pioneer in developing hard surface roads, including the first road from West Palm Beach to Miami.
What were they paved with?
I don't know, but it had to be lime rock,
mm-hmm.
the local limestone that you find in South Florida. And Flagler and his wife and their steam-powered limousine were among the first people to drive from West Palm Beach to Miami on this road.
Do you think if Flagler had been born maybe 20, 30 years later, he would have taken a different track and been more invested in roads than rail?
Could be. Well, in fact, you can look to the future here. One of the things that Henry Flagler did was to promote the beach races, mm-hmm. in Ormond Beach, Daytona Beach. So if you watch the Daytona 500 race on television these days, you can thank Henry Flagler for getting that started back in 1904 when the races were held on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
The beach races continued on down to the 1950s, and there were several world speed records set on the Ormond Daytona Beach.
Mm-hmm.
But the Daytona Speedway, I believe, was built in the mid-1950s,
mm-hmm.
and has become what it is today.
I've been speaking to Tom Graham. He's a professor of history at Flagler College. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Mr. Flagler, St. Augustine, and it tells the story of how Henry Flagler transformed the city of St. Augustine into a vacation destination for the rich and elite. Dr. Graham, thank you very much for speaking to me.
It's been a pleasure.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.